Welcome to the Parentpreneur Accelerator Podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan. Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Claire Russell, the founder of Play Hooray. Claire is an early year specialist with a passion for encouraging families with young children to play. And Claire runs Play Hooray, which is an online community of parents, carers, and educators, where she supports, advises, and inspires them to play with their babies and young children. Not only for the purpose of supporting child development, but also for the benefits of the parent too. Alongside this, Claire also has a line of activity cards called Play Prompts, which are sold on her website and a free Play Prompts app. So in this episode, we're going to cover the importance of play and why Claire has built an entire business around it, the importance of community on social media and how she's used that to grow her business. And also we'll dive deeper into the Play Hooray business and how that works and take some of the key lessons that she's learned from building that. So Claire, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Alexis. What a lovely introduction. You've summed it all up very well for me. Thank you.
Brilliant. My pleasure. Well, let's start off going deep into your specialist area of expertise around early years and play and so on. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. So I used to be a primary school teacher specialising in early years. So we're talking babies up to about the age of 7, really. Mm-hmm. And after that, they get a bit too big for me. And I was been teaching in a large school in Bristol for a long time. I was in a middle management role, so I was no longer teaching as such, more in the office based, and was very hands on and really enjoyed overseeing a small part of the school. And then I had my little boy. I'd been teaching for a few years, had my little boy. And sadly, with teaching these days, it's getting quite common that it's not always the easiest to go back to after having a family. It used to be the a line of work that I think people assumed when it worked quite well with having a family. However, teaching these days, as you know, it's long and very unsociable hours. Mm-hmm. And so when I had Mason, he's 4 and a half now, nearly 5. It was made quite clear to me by the school that I returned full time or I didn't return. Part time wasn't an option. So I decided to take a break from teaching. It was never going to be a long break. It was just going to be while we worked out. I wanted to be at home with Mason for a little bit longer. And yeah, that was sort of how it started. But it was never the plan to be a business. It was never that I would completely leave teaching. I never thought that would happen. And I live in Bristol with my husband, our big dog, and Mason, who, yeah, he's 4 and a half, just started school. And when I first had him, we didn't have very few friends in Bristol, and our families lived far away, so didn't have a huge network around me, and just found the days at home with a baby were, they were lovely and very nice, but it can be a long day at home with a young one, and could go many hours without speaking to an adult. You know, you do the baby classes and things like that, but at the end of the day, it can be quite a long day. And then I just found that I was falling back on my knowledge from teaching and the days of working with children. It was almost like a light bulb moment, really, that I was like, oh, and we can do all the play stuff that I used to do. It was all my expertise from when I was training at university to the things I was doing in school. I was then using that and using play activities and ideas with Mason, who was a baby at the time, just to keep him entertained. But I also found it brought a bit of routine into my day, and it was keeping me stimulated and almost giving me a bit of purpose for the day, really, particularly those dull, rainy days where you don't want to leave the house. You're absolutely exhausted, but you've got this baby to entertain. And I just found that play almost saved me, really. And it snowballed from there. I started sharing what I was doing with my little boy on social media. And also, as I became friends with other parents with babies and they come over to the house, and there'd be times when maybe I had a pile of books in the corner and be like, oh, you're reading to him. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah. And like, really, at this stage, when, you know, when they're tiny babies, are they, is it worth it? And then, of course, you know, don't want to sound like a know-all, but then obviously I'd explain why it's beneficial to read to a baby, and they'd find it interesting. And it was, it all just happened very naturally. And so it grew from there. And I started on Facebook and then did a bit more on Instagram. And it's, yeah, it's slowly snowballed and it's grown. And now it is my full-time job. And Mason, my little boy, has started school, which at this point I always thought I'd have then returned to school. But actually, yeah, Play Hooray is now, I'm doing it. I'm living and breathing it, should we say. So that's sort of how I've got to this point, really.
That's fantastic. I love that. And it's such a, it's so great, I think, for parentpreneurs to kind of hear how common that story is, where after having kids, it, like, the previous career or whatever doesn't quite work. And it's so hard to kind of make that shift, because you almost look at it and go, oh, well, you know, maybe I'm the one that's wrong. Maybe actually the world of work and careers and so on mean that I'm meant to, you know, just go back to work full time, despite the fact that I feel like that's not quite right for me and my family. And I think it's so important for people to hear where people have taken a different path and done something a bit different to kind of overcome that. So credit to you for making those decisions. I think really interesting as well how, you know, some people that we talked to through the podcast, they have this idea. Maybe it's something that they came up with, you know, before having kids, and then they finally think, oh yeah, I should turn this into a business. In your case, you know, to some extent, you started by doing what I often recommend through this podcast, which is start by testing the product first. You know, go get some customers, free or paid, initially, ideally paid, who genuinely get value. And it sounds like in your case, that's kind of the starting point. You started just doing it because you were kind of doing it anyway, and then that kind of grew in the business. I guess the challenge there is, how did you work out how to just go from, you know, telling other people what you think and what you're doing and so on, and turn that into a product or a service that people could actually buy, or that, you know, would have value beyond just kind of, you know, what people can get for free? Yeah. How did you kind of make that leap?
So, as I said, I was sharing activities online. So it was very much, this is just what I'm doing with Mason, my little boy, and a bit of the theory behind it as well. This is why it's actually really important that he's rolling these balls. And I would go into a bit of the theory behind play about his physical development and that sort of stuff. And I noticed a bit of a pattern. It was those activities that I shared where you didn't need any resources, where it was using household items. It was those that people could copy straight away. I mean, there are some lovely play activities you can do out there, but you don't have half an hour to set them up. And also, you shouldn't be setting them up for half an hour, because as we all know, babies will trash them. They might play with them, they might not. So it was all about those that were the quickest, the easiest, the simplest, were the most popular and were getting most interaction and lots of questions and lots of people saying, oh, thanks for sharing this, I'm going to go and do this now. And I think that's it sometimes, is that we are all tired and exhausted, and you may have been up all night, but yet your baby still needs stimulating and you're still looking for something to do with them. And also, if we're honest, it can get a bit boring playing with the babies, dare we say, because it's so repetitive and you feel like you're doing the same thing all the time. You just want to mix it up a bit. So I found that those ones where, I don't know, it was pulling scarves out of a box, or just the simplest things where you didn't need anything. You could go and grab some wooden spoons. You could go and grab something that's in toilet rolls in the house. It was those ones that people really liked and sort of interacted with, and then were copying them and using them with their babies. And it was that was a really nice feeling, because I loved that part of teaching, was the impact you're having and that you're helping families. And I really enjoyed that part of it. And then it was actually, I made something for myself, predominantly, and I made a pack of cards with some ideas, some of those simple ideas I knew my little boy liked, or some that I intended on doing. I had maybe thought, oh, I've got a good idea, I bet he'd really enjoy this. And I thought, I'll jot them down on some little cards. And then when I'm stuck, particularly those days when you're tired and you just can't think of anything to do with them, and you've been to the park 20 times that week already, and you think, I can't possibly go to the park again, well, you could pull out a card and that there'd be a really easy idea on it, and that you could go and set it up and play it straight away with no thinking. And the idea was that you could set it up in the time it takes to make a cup of tea, because then you could sit and have a cup of tea while your baby's stimulated. Obviously, you're supervising and they're playing. And it was that was my logic. I was making it for myself. And then it was, like I said, friends asking questions and other people online. I mean, at this time, I had a really small community. I didn't even have 500 followers. It was still very small. And I think it was because of that I was maybe brave enough to take that leap. But I was making the cards and I used them for myself, and I called them play prompts, because that was the idea, that they were just going to prompt an idea for play. Yeah, I said to my husband, just on a complete whim, I might just see if anyone else would use these, because, yeah, I was noticing that people were liking the ideas, they were liking the simplicity of them, and also people quite enjoyed hearing about the theory behind the play. It's quite a nice way of like educating people. So I made them on my laptop. It was my husband's laptop, actually. I didn't have one because I'd had to give mine back to school. I was using my husband's laptop and made these little cards, put a little cover on them. And they just happened to fit in a spare tin that I had in the house. So it really was starting from scratch. And I just took a photo of them and said, I've made these. Would anyone else feel that they would benefit from a pack of activity ideas? At that point, Mason was just over one. So the activities I did were for 1-year-olds plus. And advertised that, just shared them, and few people ordered them. You know, hadn't sorted the pricing, hadn't sorted that they went into a large letter rather than small letter. So posted, you know, it was just just a little tester, and people bought them, and then they kept buying them, and the community was growing online, and it just snowballed from there. And then as it went on, I'd get contacted, and someone would say, perhaps, or do you have any of these for babies? Or do you have any of these for bath time? I'm getting stuck at bath time. We've got the same old toys. I'm bored of it. Any ideas for what I can do at bath time? So it's all snowballed from there, really, it was something that I knew I would use. But despite having my expertise in play, I still needed just the prompts and the easy ideas. And then I'm looking at them. We've now got over 30 packs in the line in the range of play prompts. I do some big packs which have 100 activities, and then some smaller packs. The mini packs only have 25, because bath time, you only need 25 or so ideas that you can do and repeat. I've just built them from purely what people have asked me for. And recently, one of our newest packs are for weddings, for trying to entertain young children at weddings, because that's really tricky, because it's a long day of them sat down and you're trying to keep them quiet and things like that. So everything I've done has come from my community and what people are either asking me for or asking support for. And it's sort of grown from there. So I don't know if the community has obviously grown now, and we're over 100,000 families, and that's parents, carers and educators. And I don't know whether I'd have put out that initial pack. You know, it was rough and ready. I made it in paint. I'm no expert on the laptop or anything. It's just all been a matter of growing and a lot of learning along the way. And that's sort of how it all happened, really.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love that. I love that story. And I'm sure. It's because I think you exhibited so many things that we sometimes talk about in this podcast around what makes a successful startup business. How do you do the early steps to make sure that you can quickly create a business without having to waste a load of time or money doing the wrong things? And I think, the key things that stand out for me are, as we've already mentioned, first, checking that there's a market there, that you're doing something that people are interested in. Secondly, taking something which you have some kind of either skills or interest or some special advantage that allows you to do a particularly kind of good job. Quickly moving to, okay, how can I test whether there's a product or a service idea? In your case, creating play prompts. And again, not over engineering it, not spending a load of time, money, getting a thousand produced and in a warehouse and so on, which, you know, we do see. Instead, getting something mocked up as a prototype, and getting people interested enough that they might say, yeah, I'd pay some money for that. Not sure how much, but, you know, some. And then starting to work out from there, okay, how do I make this work? How do I make sure that I can get it all produced and delivered to them for less than the amount that they're paying, and so on. And going through those steps so that you've got a product that does have demand, that people are willing to pay for, that you can produce in a cost-effective way. And then the question all becomes, okay, we've now got something that, if we can scale it, it could be a viable business. And I think getting there is so hard for so many people. And yet, you know, you've demonstrated how actually you don't need to overthink it in a lot of places. You know, it is just a series of doing the thing that you really need to do, which is getting to the point where you've got some real paying customers. And as you say, now, you know, you've then grown it. We're talking about scale. You know, you've done the things that we've sometimes talked about as well, about how to scale, which is either increase the number of customers you've got. So as you say, growing your audience up to 100,000 families, or increasing the amount that those customers spend with you. And in your case, growing that to 30 different varieties of play prompts. And I love that, because you've also driven that not by some dream that you had and how you kind of imagined, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if I have this this wonderful series of products and so on. You've based it on, what do customers want? What's really going to add value to people out there? And, you know, you mentioned the bath time one. The one that I particularly liked and resonated with me was the eating out play prompts that you do. Yeah. Because, there are times, because, you know, you started off with kind of playing to fill the hours, right? You know, when you're looking after really young kids, it is filling the day with something that isn't just feeding, sleeping, dealing with crying, cleaning up, you know, messy nappies, etc. And instead
we've all been
there. Instead it's playing with them in a way that's really rewarding for them and for you. But I can see that you've then, you know, you've expanded further into time like eating out, when kids tend to be a bit older, and I love it. You know, you've, like, some of the prompts that you had for play prompts, I can, you know, see them on the website. You've got like count all the pennies in a purse or wallet, and I love it as such a simple thing. But often we don't think about that when we're sat out having dinner. We don't think, oh, how can I entertain the kids without getting the iPads out and so on. You know, and with the resources I have available to me. You've got another one, which is everyone placed their hands under the table. One person knocks. Who can guess who it was? And just that, and I love that, because I can tell that for each of these, it's not just, oh, here's a nice idea for a game. Like, you've thought about there's learning and value beyond those sorts of things. I think that's absolutely amazing. So, yeah, that's why I love that story.
Oh, thank you. I think as well, it's also being a parent myself, you know, I have sat many a times in a restaurant trying to entertain a little one and just thinking, you know, going to a restaurant used to be a treat. These days it's like, oh no, we've got to eat out. And especially on holiday, you're desperate to relax, but it can be really hard work, can't it? So it's also, I think, living and breathing it myself, it's those pain points that, right, and that was what spurred me on. Yes, people ask me, but also I was like, I need to create something for my own use, just that would keep my, I have a very active little boy. So it's very much blossomed from that, really. But I was just going to go back to you saying about the scaling up, how I scaled up the packs. And it's really funny because I saw a quote the other day, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurial quotes out these days, and it was saying about being embarrassed about your first product that goes out. And actually, I don't necessarily feel embarrassed, but looking back, you know, it was clip art images. It was, at the time, actually, the cards were circular to fit the tin. And so I printed them onto paper, bog standard cardboard bought from PC World and was printing them on the printer. When my husband got in from work, because then I could use his laptop, I was then printing them from those. And then I had a hole punch. It was like a large circular punch, and would punch them out and then would have to stick them all in. And of course, there's 100 cards to fit in the tin, and then would send them off like that. It was a really time. It used to take me ages. And every night I had blisters on my hands. This is not a oh woe is me moment, but just had blisters. Oh, it was getting really painful. But what the way that it was working at that point was that people were just sending me messages and DMs saying, oh, I saw your packs, can I order some? And so I'd sort it out, bank transfer, whatever. And then I suddenly, as they grew, I had an influx of orders, and it came from, it was very organic, but an influencer who wasn't huge at the time. I think she had 10,000 followers. She saw them and she bought some herself, and I didn't know anything about her, and she shared them. And so I had an influx of orders, and overnight I had to set up a website again, rough and ready. Never built a website before in my life. I have very basic technology knowledge. So I overnight built a very, I think I had a basic website, but it didn't have a shop on it. That was it. And I remember saying to my husband, well, I don't need a shop on it. I just have a basic, and it was one page with one picture and just what they were. And then I think a button to email me if you wanted to order. So overnight I had to add this shop to the, and so it was all new and it was all frantic and working through the night. But it was, you know, your heart's pounding out your chest because it's just so amazing that it's happening. And again, it was rough and ready. But the money that came from those orders, because people were paying up front and then I could buy the card and the printer ink and stuff like that, I was then able to find a printers in Bristol who could print my cards. And we worked out that it was much more cost effective to print them rectangular. Gosh, I was so desperate to stick to the circular cards. I absolutely loved them, but you know, sometimes you just got to go with what makes the more sensible answers to problems. So we went through those, and finding, I saw some packaging very quickly, and all of a sudden I had the rectangular card in plastic boxes, and I had two different sizes for the different size packs. And I did actually email her and said, I hope you realize by you sharing that, you've opened up my community to more followers. They've bought more. I've raised enough money to now get them printed professionally. And this was, you know, I was ordering in still in packs of 100, not in thousands. I was ordering in hundreds, whatever. And also the printers I found in Bristol were wonderful and held my hand all the way through. And again, the cards were made in clip art and Word and Publisher and things, but they stuck with me and supported me through it. And then it was last year, as we were growing, and of course we were all becoming more aware of plastic, and I thought, right, okay, now I want to get away from that plastic packaging. I was sending them out in lovely bubble wrap envelopes, which looked very nice when they fell through the door, but I was conscious that, wow, it's plastic, and then they're in a plastic box. It was a lot of plastic, so I didn't want my customers' first impression being like, wow, that's a lot of plastic. So I decided, right, okay, we need some sort of better packaging, a box, and I had in my head that I wanted a matchbox style box. And then at that point I was like, right, well, if we're reboxing them, now's my opportunity to rebrand them as well. And so it's all happened really naturally and a lot of gut instinct, and yeah, that's how it, there's, dare I say, there's never been a plan. I don't have a business plan. These things have all happened. It's all had a little knock-on effect, and okay, now that we've done this, we can do this. And yeah, so that's sort of how it's, how we've got to where we are today, really, particularly with the scaling up thing.
Yeah, I love that. I think because that's you mentioned I think it's Reid Hoffman, his quote,
his quote
from LinkedIn. Yeah, it's if you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, then you've shipped too late. And I think that's so crucial. I remember he wrote an article, which I'll link to in the show notes, about he sort of elaborates more on that and emphasizes how it's not about, you know, he clarifies that he didn't say if you're not deeply ashamed of your product, or if you're not indicted and arrested after the first version of your product. It's like, because you do want to get it, you do want to get to a minimum level of quality, but you probably should still feel a little embarrassed. And I think that's the crucial bit, is about making sure that, you know, there's another quote, which is the perfect is the enemy of the good. You know, it's you need to get it to a point as quickly as you can that is good enough so that you can do the next stage of learning. And in your case, it's the next stage of learning was, okay, I've got, you know, I've, as you say, I've suddenly got influence out there. They're promoters. I need to be able to at least take these orders and get it out there before I then learn a little bit more about the scale of the product. And then you start to find more cost-effective ways. And I think also I love the fact that you highlight taking the opportunity. So branding is something that people get to focused on way too early. You know, they kind of want it all perfect, and of course most people are embarrassed by their new website or their branding within 12 months of it being created. You're already looking back going, oh my god, that's awful. And of course the customers take a lot longer. They may never get fed up with that shoddy piece of branding or website that you kind of feel is awful. And of course, if they do and they provide that as feedback, then what a great opportunity to then do something about it. But it's often those sorts of things are worked on by the entrepreneur because of their own kind of sense of either embarrassment or ego or whatever. And I love that you highlight you took the opportunity to update the branding when it made sense to do so. It wasn't its own thing. It wasn't something that you did because you're getting loads of customer reviews and feedback about it. Therefore, it was something that was done as a nice to have alongside other things. And I think, as you say, it's that organic, natural approach to growing and making those changes. In terms of kind of financially as that grew, because as you say, you've then had to make changes in the product and so on. Often a challenge for business owners is when they start to realize, there's various suppliers or employees, etc., that I need to bring on board, and perhaps I didn't consider these costs as part of it, etc. Have you found that part of then that journey? Did that present some additional barriers? How did you overcome those?
Yeah, I have to confess, even today, I find it boggles my mind that it costs, everything costs, every little part of your business costs you money. It is crazy. I mean, there are some fantastic apps out there, but even those, you end up updating them and upgrading for the paid version. Yeah, it really does surprise me just how much everything costs. And I think maybe I was a little bit naive with that. I'm not sure, you know, even from email marketing things, you assume these things are going to be free, but of course you end up paying. So I find, the costs do add up, actually. And once you start maybe taking things a little bit more seriously, you know, before I was doing it while Lisa was a baby at home, if I got an order, bonus, wow, great, you know, this is great. Whereas now this is my full-time job, and at the moment I still don't take a wage from Play Hooray. Mm-hmm. Everything that the business earns goes back into the business, just because I feel that we're at quite a vital stage from the rebrand last year. There's been lots of changes, launching the app, there's been a lot of costly changes, but I hand on heart think are worthwhile and will be worthwhile, and maybe one day, it's looking like hopefully soon, I will be able to take a wage. You know, I'm in it for the long run. I'm not here to make a few millions overnight and then do one. So I must say that I find that quite tricky, but like I said, like everything that we earn, every penny I earn, I do reinvest in the business. And it's come as quite a surprise having, you know, you have to pay for a website, you have to pay for a shop, you have to pay for every transaction that goes through. I wasn't aware of that before. It's all been a huge learning curve for me. But I must confess, before running Play Hooray, didn't really take any note of finances. Just, you know, my teaching wage would come in every month, and then we would spend it and go out for dinner and I'd buy dresses. You know what I mean? I was very, whereas now I will check my business accounts, PayPal. I'm very aware of my finances now because I have overheads. It just costs to survive the business at the moment, and checking that sales are covering that and things, you know, and there are a couple of months where things have got quite tight. But I think it's just being, just knowing your finances is just so vital, and knowing where you are and being aware. I have a list of all different suppliers, whether it's packaging, whether it's labels, whether it's inserts that go in with my packet, the play prompts, restocking, you know, it's remembering that you've got a big chunk to pay out when you restock the cars before you've even sold it. So yeah, I think it's just being really mindful and keeping on top of your finances. I know it's not pleasant. I don't like it. And learning to do accounts and, oh my goodness, all that, all the tax and all that sort of stuff is another thing. And luckily I've got a lovely accountant who talks me through it and helps me with it all. But yeah, it's just been a huge learning curve, but I've just found that keeping your eye on it all the time and keeping on top of it really does help. Yeah,
definitely. I think that's it's an area for a lot of entrepreneurs. It's probably one of the steepest learning curves for them is getting on the financials. I think I'll share a book recommendation which may be relevant to you as well, actually. Which is Profit First by Mike McAllowitz. And the reason I particularly mentioned it, so one, I found it incredibly useful and transformational for both myself and other entrepreneurs, kind of getting to grips with finances of a business and so on. But actually, probably even more importantly, the point you made earlier around historically you've kind of ploughed every penny right back into the business and growing it and so on is great and normal, but that actually Profit First advocates an approach that even if you start with just 1% of your profit coming out as a discipline, it's a really useful thing to do. And I found that that was probably the biggest change for me, was kind of creating a discipline where you start treating manager pay, i.e. paying yourself for managing the business, and then separately having kind of dividend for shareholders, and then separately your money that's being reinvested, and having those as things, even if they are tiny percentages at the beginning, like just having that as a discipline makes it so much easier later on to then make sure that, you know, you're kind of adjusting that you're kind of aware of the gap and at what point it needs to change, and that you're then adjusting as you go along, rather than like always planning on the one day I'll take money out of this business, and then like, because I see so many businesses where that never happens, right? So you may find that useful, but I know that certainly any listeners that kind of listen thinking, oh yes, I'm rubbish at the finances, I highly recommend that. It's in fact, I've even written it into the onboarding for my finance team now. It doesn't matter what accounting qualifications you might have, if you're going to come and help me, you need to read this book.
That's really interesting you say that. I've not heard of that book before, but I was saying to my husband, I don't know whether it's possibly the way that I'm thinking now that my little boy's in school, and it is very much a full-time job for me. I was discussing it with my husband and saying about if I, like you said, even if I took out a small, just £50, £100 for the month, just to take something out, I will find a way of covering that. And like you said, it's just getting into that habit. If it's coming out, I'll be aware that that money's come out. And so if needs be, I need to push sales a bit more or talk about the packs a little bit more, I would find a way of covering that expense of such. So, yeah, that's really interesting. You said that I'm going to have to read that book. I've not heard of that one before. Yeah. I have also read, I recommend a book that I read. Now then, I haven't got it on my, I can't see it. You may know it. Is it the £99 Startup or... I can't think of it off the top of my head now, and it's in the other room. I'll have to send you a link, and it's all about starting a business with literally $100, and just the way that it's a lot of stories of people who have done it and done it successfully, and similar to me, who have just snowballed and grown with time. That's quite an interesting book too that I would quite recommend. But I'm really sorry, I can't think of it off the top of my head now.
That's okay. We'll make sure that we include once we've identified exactly what it is. I think are you referring to the $100 Startup, Fire Your Boss, Do What You Love, Work Better to Live More? That one by Chris Gilbo. Is that right?
Possibly.
We'll find out. And those of you that can't wait to find out, go to the show notes and take a look, and you'll find the link. And you can laugh at how different the title ends up being to the one that we're trying to remember at the moment.
Isn't it typical?
indeed. No, that's cool, and thank you for that. We'll make sure that we get some links in there. But I think it's back to that point around that learning curve for us as entrepreneurs. It's wherever you're background has been, obviously you still need to develop in those areas, and we'll come back to play and talk a little bit about that in a second. But it's so important to be growing and developing in those areas that you're weakest, because in theories people say, oh well, you can fill that with employees or other people that can support you, and to some extent that's true, particularly as you grow, but actually you need a basic level of knowledge. Like you can't, for example, if you have zero finance knowledge and you decide, oh, I'll just outsource that to an accountant, you will just be plagued by a series of bad accountants that do really bad jobs for you in a business that you don't understand. And it's, I think that, your approach there is worthy of credit. Just quickly on play. We talked briefly about some of the benefits of play. What are some of the, what advice would you give to other parentpreneurs out there that are thinking, I perhaps don't get enough time to play with my kids. And when I do, it's so busy. I just walk in and there's toys everywhere. And how do I get started on this? Like what kind of core principles would you suggest that people kind of have in their mind when they're thinking about playing with their kids?
Okay. I can completely understand that. I do get a lot of messages from families who say, I understand, I've been following you, I understand that play is really important, and I know it supports their development and stuff. But one, I'm busy, I'm working, I see my child just before bedtime, and then it's putting them to bed and it's all dash, dash, dash. And then weekends, we've got errands to do. I'm struggling to find the time for it. Or people who just find it really hard, because it's not easy. And say, I find it really hard to be silly with the kids, actually, which is completely understandable. I think some people just, it's easier for me to assume that everyone knows how to play with their young children, but actually it's just not the case. And sometimes it might be a confidence thing. So what I always suggest is, particularly with finding the time for it, I think it's just being mindful of just 5 minutes. And that doesn't have to be 5 minutes every day, just a couple of minutes of you being on your child's level. Put your phone aside, just get down on the floor and being at your child's eye level and just sitting and chatting with them, whether it's having a conversation, whether it's they're playing and you're just going to sit next to them and copy them, joining in their play, rather than going in and taking over or going in and, should we do this? Should we build a den? Sit down and just copy what they're doing, because they will really appreciate that. Your child's going to just think that your child already thinks the world of you as a parent. You are their hero. So just by you sitting down and playing them with them is fantastic. But also, let's be realistic. And this is where I'm really conscious with my messages that come across. Yes, play is fantastic. And I work in the line of play. So it's a high priority for me in my house. But also in busy houses, don't beat yourself up if you're struggling to find the time to play. Talking to your child is the best thing that you could possibly ever do. Talking and singing and chatting and reading those bedtime stories are actually the best things that you can be doing. And if you're able to find time to do those, the play will just happen, and your child will just appreciate those sorts of things. So I think it's going along that, not giving yourself the guilt trip that you've not played every day. I'm early a specialist. I play for a living. The other day on Saturday, we had so many kids parties and football club and then errands at the post office. Actually, I got to the end of the day and realized that I'd not sat down and play with my little boy. And, I do this for a living. I live and breathe play. So there are times when life just gets in the way. So not to beat yourself up about it, but I can also reassure myself. When we were in the car and we were driving to the party, we were chatting and we were making memories in that sort of way. So I think it's just about being kind to yourself. And then for people who actually find it hard to play, actually, once they are on the floor, they put the phones aside and they get down on the floor, they find it hard, whether it's a confident thing or not knowing what to do or not knowing what to say or behave. And I know some parents and carers say to me, whenever I try and join the play, actually the child just gets almost walks off and changes their mind and goes to do something different, and that can be really tricky too, and it can be really hard for a parent to swallow that. So it's just about, if you are finding it hard, try and remember what you used to play when you were a child. What was your favorite memory from your childhood? What did you enjoy doing? And maybe introduce that to your child. So whether it's sitting and reading books, or whether it was taking cars apart, or whether it's, I don't know, hairdressers or anything like that, is do that sort of play with your child, because one, it will bring back all those wonderful memories for you, and it will help you to remember what it was like being a child and the kind of things that you used to do and how you used to behave. And also your child will absolutely love it, because you'll be full of energy and you'll be compassionate and you'll be excited. So I always try and recommend that you start with something that you're familiar with and a type of play that you used to do when you were younger, I think would probably be my biggest tips to anyone that's struggling to find play with their child.
Love that. Fantastic advice, Claire. Thank you so much. And unfortunately, we've run out of time, but it has been brilliant talking to you. It's been so inspiring to hear your journey. And I highly recommend that people check out the Play Hooray website, that they out the Play Prompts cards, also available on the website. They also check out the Play Prompts web app, which they can get by going on their phones to playprompts.co.uk. And we'll also include links to your online communities, including Facebook and Instagram and so on. So those will all be in the show notes. But any other ways in which people can should connect with you if they'd like to hear more?
I'm one of the, I'm a bit here, there and everywhere, to be honest. I'm primarily on Instagram and Facebook. I go live most mornings at 10 o'clock so I can share a really easy activity you could do with children. And I have also, I'm just branching out into the world of YouTube, but my goodness, that's not as easy as it looks. So I've just started on YouTube. So if you want more tutorials and want to learn a bit more of the theory behind play and why play is important for children, you can find me on there as well. But if you type in Play Hooray or Play Prompts, you'll find me here, there and everywhere.
Fantastic. Love it. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that, Alexis. Lovely to be on.
You too. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.